Brass Decks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
I just want to make a quick intervention based on what the gentleman said a short while ago regarding the importation of pork. I had an experience last month where I went into one of our so-called posh supermarkets, and I saw a lovely-looking piece of pork. It looked all nice and fresh and bright pink, if you could say that. And I decided, oh, there I smile and said it would come in handy for Christmas. So I bought it. And I brought it home. I put it in the freezer. And around Christmas time, I took it out and it's all nice and seasoned up and put it in the oven. I checked it and it didn't seem to be cooked because it was still kind of hard. Put it back in, left it in probably like maybe three and a half hours. When I take it out, same thing again. So I was going to throw it away at first, but then I said, no, I'm going to keep it and I'm going to pressure cook it and see what happens. Closer to Christmas, I took it out again and I pressure cook it. I pressure cook it for about 2 hours. And Mr. Johnson, I am not lying. Up to now, the pork has not cooked. So I threw it in the garbage. So I'm saying that to say that we are being fooled with this importation of pork in inverted commas. Because I am not sure if it was pork. I made a joke and said it might be rhinoceros. Anyway.
Or elephant. With the skin on. No, on a serious note, when I read in the newspaper that we're talking about labeling and standards, I too wonder about some of the things I see offered for sale. Especially if when I look all over the bottle, box, or whatever it is, and can't find one word in English. I wonder what's in this. But anyway, go ahead.
Right,
I won't eat that pork.
I mean,
I won't eat that pork, though. I
was so surprised, but I couldn't eat it after three trials that the pork did not cook. When I took out the pork from the pressure cooker, I was really surprised because I know if you pressure cook something, it will cook. But it was still the same way. The only thing it was warm as opposed to when it came out the fridge cold. But it was hard and tight and stiff. I could not even get it cut. So I threw it in the garbage. So I'm saying that was like almost $40 that went down the drain on what we call imported pork. So I will go so far as to say I do not think that what we're importing into Barbados is suitable for human consumption, because I really and truly believe it is not pork. When we kill a pig here in Barbados and
you're going to buy a pig
pork, you know for sure you have a good piece of pork. So that is my experience with imported, inverted commas, as I said before, in imported pork.
Ma'am, maybe it was frozen for so long.
I'll tell you
why I laugh, right? I am laughing because this thing about standards and labeling is something that I really have to take serious issue with. Because
it's true. They have all gone down the drain.
Look, for example, it was only when I started shopping at supermarkets that I used to feel frozen potatoes. I never know if potatoes used to be frozen. I know you go in the market and you get potato off a tree and it come out the ground and it warm. So when I started going into supermarkets and seeing cold potatoes and the bag frosted over, and I look at it and go, why the potato cold? And they tell me, oh, it was in deep freeze. Really? Okay. For how long? I don't know, because in the plastic bag and
it
the cold.
Is true.
So I don't know how long it has been there. And then when you cut it half, the inside rotten because you can't see the inside from outside.
Black.
And I say to myself, you know what?
Black.
I ain't buying this frozen potato. I don't care the way from Idaho or Idaho. I don't know where it come from. It cold, and I don't long it being cold. So this labeling thing is a problem.
Those imported things that they're bringing from, I tell myself, son, it's late to pick them off the street. But I'm saying that they are of a very poor quality.
Yeah, anyway, maybe it was a rhinoceros. maybe. Or alligator. You better make sure it was pork. That's why the gentleman from Carlton say, I know my pigs personally. Apparently you need to know the pig personally, okay? Just telling you. Thanks for making me chuckle. I always enjoy a good chuckle. Well, John would say don't eat any at all, right, John? Good, correct. Stick with the fish and some cassava. What? We're going good, right? Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, hello.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon, sir.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm trying to be good. How are you?
Oh, but not too bad. I'm glad I get this opportunity here right now to explain something Mr. Nasser said, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I was part and parcel of that furniture shipping to the United States, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me tell you, I'm going to give you one of the main things that causes that that thing about the furniture thing. We got an order from America to ship furniture to America. They sent down all of the patterns, the cabot legs as such, and want us to produce that particular type of furniture.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a meeting and everybody decided, well, you know, it is a good venture and that we would go for it, right? And during that process, I don't know if I could call some names of the manufacturer if they want to come out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I could call one name that passed away.
Mm-hmm.
To the meeting, I was in the meeting, and they said, everybody take up an order of how much they want to do as such. And I was then said, man, listen, why are you not taking an order? I say, I am not going to take an order because whosoever did the run and what it would cost, I was not involved, so I did not know exactly how much it was going to cost.
Mm-hmm.
Sergeant said to me, but never mind that, this is something good that we could start. I said to him, listen, if you, right, can take some order and I work for you and you pay me, I will work for you. Because in the first place, when the thing was put in together, this is what they do, and this is what I tell them. We all are Bajans. We've been building furniture for hundreds of years. And you think an American could come and tell you must get a piece of plywood, groove it, to make a tenant, to put the furniture together? We're accustomed to mortise and tenant. And they did not do that. But even before that, years before that, I furnished a house in Michigan, dining table, living room, and everything. And the furniture is still going because the people were doctors and they're Barbadian, and I know their family, and they always ask for me, right? When the furniture got up there, it dissected because they were using white glue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Wellwood glue have a shelf life thing. But I will go further as to tell you what happened again. Now, when the Sandiford administration take over, they went to the meeting. That's the first meeting he went to. I think it was at the Hilton. And when they got there, and they said that we were losing, right, so much amount of money shipping the furniture, the government at that point in time said that they were not going to continue with it. But we would have made the furniture for a period of time, and then we would have been able to think. But the furniture trading thing comes up due to the fact, right, that we were buying mahogany from a firm that they gave us a number. Tell us it's 100 feet of mahogany, and when you measure it,
it's not.
Sometimes you get 80,
90, and other things.
Right? I spoke to the manufacturer, right? And I'm not getting it enough of thing, and they did not have anybody measuring the lumber. I use this to measure the lumber. Sometimes when you're done building furniture, right, you can hardly pay your debt.
But let me ask you this question, right? I happen to know that there is a lot of money in old mahogany furniture. I happen to know this because my grandfather built all the furniture in his house, some of it over 100 years old, and it survived. An old four-poster bed that, you know, the casters wear off because the, you know, the steel this and that, but the mahogany itself remained. And an old fella, a Guyanese old fella, saw it covered over and tell me wood don't die. He could put it back together, but he couldn't rivet it properly because the glue today won't hold that. And if I want a little action, the bed would fall apart. He tell me all sorts of strange things, right? But anyhow, so he had to do some things he didn't like to do, like use screws to rivet the bed together. But here's the thing. He gave me all kinds of instructions how to wipe it in one direction and use a soft cloth with linseed oil and don't spray it with all them things you buy in the supermarket. Man, tell me everything you could possibly think of but old bed. You bring it back to new do. But here's my point. If people getting offered $8,000 and 10,000 Canadian for that type of furniture, why did the people who know how to build it, who know all the things you just talked about, the right type of wood, whether it dried properly, mortise and tenon, as opposed to just using glue, the lifespan of glue, why is it all that knowledge and all that expertise was thrown away?
Well, let
because apparently people could buy cheap furniture at $3,900 a year, every year for 10 years. Because I know people in Barbados who every Christmas just buy a whole set of furniture that costs $3,000 and $4,000.
Look, let me tell you
something. Because the old one mashup.
Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
I used to, there was a company up in Newton where I work, used to produce the antique furniture. I have books on it, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people from Martinique used to come to Barbados and buy the antique furniture. Mm-hmm. We started to produce the antique furniture, right? The gentleman died, which was very, very good, right? And the government stopped us from producing the antique furniture.
Well, how did they stop you? What did they tell you? Don't produce it anymore? No, but what did they tell you? Don't stop it. Don't do it anymore?
Hold on. Let me tell you why they stopped it, whether you believe it or not.
No, I'm just asking you. Well.
They said that we will get picking up the antique furniture here, mm-hmm. right, and shipping it away, mm-hmm. right? Because the furniture were identical, more or less, like the real original. Mm-hmm. There was a lady named Julian I used to work for, right, that we used to produce a chair called Chippendale. Chippendale was a company that used to make furniture for the royal family. Mm-hmm. They used to make the chair. Duncan 5 was specialized in the dining table. If I used to sit down and tell you some things that are going on in this country,
but
right?
My question remains, if someone says to you, you're making furniture that replicates Chippendale furniture, it's almost as good as it, you're getting paid foreign money, but why stop it?
Because
Chippendale sue you?
They did not believe, they did not want us because the amount of money that you would have get, right?
And then tax you for it and make some taxes. I didn't see why not.
They're not into that. The point is I used to prolong the whole thing. Mr. Johnson, take a little time with me and I will tell you something about this
Sir, listen. I keep trying to tell people who tell me they want to tell me these things. My life depressed enough. I don't like to listen to depressing stories, which is why I sit and laugh. My question, it keeps worrying me, sir, that we have people who are talented, people who can design, people who can build, people who can make things. I can't do them things. And when I see their work being not recognized, and they sound despondent, they sound like, I know how to do this, but I ain't want to. Let me give you an example of what we're talking about. There's a gentleman I know, he's now deceased too, so may he rest in peace, who worked with Ford Motor Company in England back in the day, when you worked with Ford, apparently, and you're a black man from the West Indies, you used to have to do everything. So he could spray paint, he could fix engine, he could upholster, he could do everything. When they started mechanizing the company he worked at, and if you're putting on the left door, all you're putting on is the left door for the rest of your life, he took early retirement, they gave him a bundle load of tools, He came back home, built a house, sit back and he crossed his legs. It's a man who would sit on his house and he would drive up to his house to carry something that my father sent me with when I was a young boy. And he would tell me, young Johnson, that car you were driving about there so that you feel this, it need A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I say, oh, you know why I'm driving, man? Man, that's a Ford. That's a Capri, a this, I know that. Go and get some points, some plugs, bring a pint and a half and a big Coke and come Saturday morning, I can fix it. And the man sit down and tune the car. So I ask him, so why you ain't showing nobody? Man, I ain't got time to do that, man. And young boys today want. Man, daddy leave a bundle load of tools and all the talent. Nobody can do it. We have killed the spirit of our people. The people of my grandfather era built the Jolly Rogers. They sail up and down the Caribbean on boats. And that shipbuilding, fixing, or boats, the screw dock, or design for ships just gone. We import something coming out of Miami for freshwater lakes and put it on salt water here in the Caribbean and mash it up. And we content to do that and buy another one. There has to be something wrong. And it's not about telling the sad story. It's about passing on the creative juice that says, we know how to do this. That's why they used to come and thief with things, because we knew how to do it. Mahogany trees fall down because they're old, and unless Medford Mahogany or somebody takes it, it just goes to nothing. And we import cheap furniture from Colombia or somewhere and sell it at $4,000 because it looks nice. Anyhow, thanks for sharing with us, sir, but, you know, I try not to be depressed this early in 2020. The WhatsApp says, I'm a regular goer to Folkestone Beach. Can you please send a message to the relevant authorities as to when the showers will be fixed? The showers were out of order since July last year when my relatives were here. They're coming back in March and then September. And could you kindly ask them if it would be finished by then? Someone said, I thought that the polytechnic was for this, to preserve the talents and craft for future generations. I thought so too. But here is the problem that with that. If you have companies in Barbados whose headquarters are in Colombia, Nicaragua, Yugoslavia, halfway around the world, and their head office or their head offices, they're the ones responsible for the ordering of their products to send worldwide because they have outlets throughout the Caribbean and the rest of Latin America that they consider all in the same basin anyhow. And so they order, you know, 50,000 units, 150,000 units, and they tell their outlets in Barbados, in Trinidad, in Jamaica, in St. Vincent, you have to sell 20,000 units per year, or we shut you down, or you don't get your bonus. So their objective is to sell the 20,000 units from their head office as fast as possible. So they have midnight sale, midday sale, Black Friday, Blue Friday, Green Wednesday, Thorough Thursday to get 20,000 units sold. You think there is any incentive for them to tell their head office in wherever they are, you know, we could get real good stuff in Barbados that you could sell to those people in Uzbekistan or Huge Dickinson, wherever you are, and they would pay you four times what we get in with these 20,000 units here, because you could get them at 10,000 US a piece and 8,000 US a piece, because it's handcrafted, antique, furniture, yada, yada, yada. If your bosses in Barbados don't have the rocks to tell them that, you ain't selling nothing. You trying to secure your bonus. So you will sell the 20,000 units on Black Friday, Blue Friday, Green Friday. And the people in Barbados who keep looking at YouTube and all the other flap screen TV that you have, and they keep buying it because you tell them nothing down for the next 6 months. Now, I know I can get licks because we depend on them to advertise. But when I sit here to host this program, I have to speak from where I feel, right? So I can take the squeeze of my rocks for saying what I say. I can live with that. Everything else gets squeezed, so that could get squeezed too. Here's our problem, people. We keep trying to live somebody else's lifestyle because we're looking at ourselves in a broken mirror. That's the problem. So when they come with what my mother used to call the 9 eggs for a penny, everyone rotten. That used to mean she ain't gonna believe my story when I tell her, even with a straight face and tears running down my cheek. We can continue to find ourselves in debt and governments having to cut this and cut that and squeeze that because we want to pay some debt. Because we're not using what we have. People talking about cars mashing up on the road. We import cars into Barbados completely knocked down, mashed up, crashed, or we say they are, and we fix them and put them on the roads. Some people do it well, some people don't do it well. And when they fall apart, we wonder why. I remember my good friend who used to call the program. He hasn't called yet in a while. He must be fixing buses or maybe something else. Garbage trucks. Anyway, I got ripped because I'm told that they fix it better than the new ones. Okay. But they're still falling apart and looking like corned beef cans when they get hit. Because they were brought in, quote unquote, it's crashed. And yes, we test them and make sure that they're roadworthy. But then we drive them like idiots. Because we feel they're invincible. Strange. Brastex, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Now, my comment, I'm very pleased with what you're saying. I love what you're saying. That's what I love to hear.
Oh, you do?
Now,
okay.
Yes, man. I'm really enjoying your program today.
Well, I thank you, sir.
A lot of what I like. But I'm going down that same road now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I used to, in fact, if anyone who would survey our political scene would recognize, based on evidence, that economic nationalism died with the death of Tom Adams. Because if you've noticed that post-Tom Adams, all the political class seem to have created a consumer society and a society of workers. Yesterday, I was very pleased when I read an article by Dr. Leroy McLean.
Yeah, I saw it.
And you read it?
I read it.
Oh, very, very interesting. In fact, he's talking exactly how he thinks. And I was happy to see that there's somebody who feels that Barbadians should have a stake in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it saddens me to think that Barbados is perhaps, in terms of ownership and control, we must be worse off than during colonial rule. Because, for example, right now we're supposed to have Tom Adams, in fact, he was responsible for this, setting up the securities exchange. Now, a securities exchange must depend on companies that are worthwhile companies being listed on the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we have none. And in fact, if you look, what has happened in the country is that right now we have no capital market because, as you know, government cannot even issue any securities anymore. So where will we invest our money? Two major pillars of any developed society would have to be government securities and equities. And of course, if you don't have any equities and you have no government securities, where will people...
They put it in the bank at 0.001%.
Right, but then there's a point that I really asked Lewis, but a comment he made, if I had it here, would co-share with you, mm-hmm. about capital accumulation.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we don't have people in our, if we cannot accumulate capital within our walls, how are we going to create jobs for our young people?
And sir, this is key, because here's my worry. When I talk to young people, and I'm talking about people between the ages of, let's say, 16 and 24, you know, 75% of them don't see their future as being here at all. That's a frightening thing for me as an old man.
No, but it has so many disadvantages to it. I mean, it retards the development. The fact that all these, as he mentioned here, and I was very pleased with what he said, In fact, you read it, so you knew what you said.
Yeah.
Right, good.
Yeah.
Right, it's not even quoted what you said. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad to see that there's someone out there who, and this is a debate that has to take place, because I could see, Mr. Johnson, that in future,
mm-hmm.
we are going to have a serious problem in this country. A lot of the young people are going to be demonstrating against lack of any stake in the country. And if the people now don't, I mean, you see what's happening in Iran? Now,
yeah.
after the revolution in 79, you see, but they last for a while, right?
Mm-hmm.
Things are going all right. But you see what happening now? That will be overthrown. That system, the Islamic revolution, will be. There will be another revolution. And it's coming. What I'm saying is that in our own country, do you think that you're educating people? Do you think that young people are, a large number of the young people, maybe a lot of them don't have any interest, of course. A lot of them seem not to say anything. But I'll tell you, there are some. There's a major debate is going to take place in the country about control. When children grow up and see they have nothing, and they have to go and work for the, I mean, like our generation, possibly many of us, many people left school would have gone to work for foreign banks, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But when the young people see we have nothing in the country, that we're just consumers and workers, this is going to be a problem. I could see it coming.
The worrying thing for me, and I agree with some of what you're saying, the worrying thing for me is when they see the only avenue for escape as a violent one. That's my main worry, because you talk about the Islamic revolution and that there will be a counter-revolution. Those things build up over time because people see there is no other option. If they see another option, they try it for a while, or they try to find another option first. I don't think a violent overthrow is the first option. But yeah, my thing is this. When you have a situation where even if they take it by whatever means, because sadly I saw it happening in one of my homelands.
Grenada.
Yes. When you take it...
I was thinking of that.
When you take it by whatever means, and you then get to the point where, one, you don't meet the expectations of those who supported you, and then two, you resort to the same thing that you tried to get rid of. In other words, you create another elitist class.
That's right.
Who says, this is my time, no, you keep quiet. I get in what I want first. You do nothing, because you had a situation where you had a premier, prime minister, who acquired all sorts of properties, sometimes in strange ways. So the government took it back when they overthrew him. They took it back from him. And then what happened? The same militia you created said, soldier ain't had no boots, but government driving new car and air-conditioned car. The same thing you rebelled against, you suddenly saw it in your face. And you started to lose the kind of goodwill that you had built up. If you create a class of people who don't know how to own, who don't know how to invest, who don't know how to spread wealth, who do not know how to create wealth. If you give them wealth, what will they do with it? Squander it.
But
throw it away and sell it back to the same people who they took it from in the first place, because you've stifled their desire to create and build. What you've done is created a desire to want whatever they want and want it now.
But Mr. Johnson, invariably, right? When naturally the people are not happy with a particular system,
mm-hmm.
but what some will come. The next system will be no better. Invariably,
yeah,
it is no better.
Agreed. I can't disagree with you.
People feel. Don't forget, the people are a new party or whatever. People feel, well, look, oh well, there's something. At least they will do better than the last set.
They don't.
And invariably, they're wrong.
Invariably. Yeah.
Invariably, they're wrong. If you saw Cuba was a different example. One, everybody thought that Castro would have ended like Batista,
mm-hmm.
but it would have been in a different direction. But it is frightening, because, for example, if you take when I was in the early times, I remember there was a movement in Barbados where people were fighting for Barbadians to be promoted to senior
positions,
the foreign mm-hmm. companies. You remember that even
mm-hmm, yep.
back in the yes.
Oh, yes
what has happened now? Check and see what is happening. If you look at all the foreign-owned enterprises, what they do, they bring their top people from abroad.
Mm-hmm.
And the Barbadians are stifled in that they cannot reach the top.
And they go out.
This is a problem. You know, so it's an area that people don't, I guess the average man is not concerned about it.
But you see, and this is why I talk about stifling your creative desire to expand rather than to just say, this is what I want and I'll settle for it, okay? It is unfortunate. It is unfortunate because, as I said, our creative thinkers think that the only way out for them is to go somewhere else where creativity is appreciated rather than staying at home and working it. I heard the architects yesterday, all trained, all experienced people saying, but you could incorporate this and you should look at this and you should look at that. But the how and the when and the how much it would take to do it is lost in the investor who says, this is my template. We have done it this way in 40 different countries. This is how we do it. This is how fast we set it up. And this is how soon you could start making some money back. And we grab at that. Now, let me ask you this question. I hear from time to time, they talk about, we need a local bank. We need a this, we need a that. Why don't we have the same faith in our credit unions that we've created for ourselves? Why don't we have the inspiration, let me put it that way, to create new vehicles for employment, new vehicles for investment, and the creativity to fashion a marketing strategy that would let those with money buy into our ideas? Because look at what's happening with what we've created. Life of Barbados Mutual bought by somebody else.
Yes. In fact,
everything that we've created, once it has gotten to a certain stage, somebody has looked at it and said, let me get that. And we have given it up without saying, okay, what else can I make? We're just content to go along with it.
Mr. Johnson, let me say to you this. You would have to take Canada, for example. Mm-hmm. You ever heard anybody bought a Canadian bank?
Not that I could think of.
From what I understand, in order to buy a Canadian bank, it has to go to Parliament. I believe they created the law to protect themselves against the predators. From the South. Because I'm sure by now, if they didn't have laws protecting
Bank of America, and then would have buy them out.
That's right. So what I'm saying is, if for a small country like Barbados, if we need to have our people control anything, the political class will have to get involved and have laws to prevent. For instance, take National Bank and ICB. Mm-hmm. When they were created, the government should have had it laid. A law should be made. They could not be sold. Those are things that, in fact, he mentioned them here, and this is sad about ICB and BNB. Mm-hmm. There should be a law, but they should not be sold unless Parliament agreed. Because there were major assets created for the people of Barbados, and they should never have been. In Canada, you cannot.
Let me ask you this question. If the government gets into financial problems and figure this is the only way to make money, the government will then change the law to suit themselves because they want the money.
Well, this is true. Yes,
and that is the problem that we have faced with a lot of our indigenous entities.
But the thing is, what I'm saying is, if there is a law on the books, but the banks are not owned by the government. You see what I mean?
They're
not owned.
Correct. No, that's
in Canada,
that's it.
The banks are not owned by the government.
That's correct.
But they're owned. The law, you understand, that they cannot be sold to foreigners.
Yeah.
And if you look at Canada is a country that controls. And it's interesting that they have had banks. And if you don't realize, there's no country that controls its financial system closer than Canada.
Yeah, they're tight on that.
And
as a matter of fact, they spread it to Canadian entities all over the world.
That's right. But listen to this. I don't know if you saw in the papers. The gentleman, the first non-white head of Sagicor, said, I read in the papers recently when that entity was sold to Canadian, he referred to it as transformative. You saw it?
Yeah, I saw that, sir.
A Barbadian non-white. A company that was started by white Barbadians who were very patriotic to start company.
Some of them were from Guyana too. Life of Barbadians started by a gentleman who was Guyanese originally.
Sir Johnson, the only thing that I saw the only thing I saw transformative about that was the package that I saw in papers that he got.
No, you see, sir, and that is the underlying point I was making when I talked about how we see our way forward. because there's several of our people who over the years have been creative in their thinking, who have been diligent in their endeavors, and they've reached a stage where they say, look, I need to be comfortable in my golden years, and this is my parachute. When I sit and read the newspaper and see that Nissan fired their boss and he gets $63 million to leave, or $24 million to leave, you know, you ask yourself, well, if you send me home and you give me $24 million or $60 million, why would I not take it? What we have to do, however, is to try to find a way to encourage or thinkers or designers or young people to try to fashion a way of life that they would enjoy in the land of their birth. Because until and unless we can do that, sir, you will find that people will go somewhere else. I'm not saying don't leave Barbados. I'm not saying don't leave the Caribbean. I think travel is a great teacher, and going to different countries, seeing different cultures, learning how people cope with their challenges will help you in fashioning a way of life that will improve the country and the countries of your birth. But if we have people who say, me, I ain't coming back there for nothing. There is nothing here for me. I don't like the politics. I don't like the whatever. I just go in. You lose an identity. Your country becomes an alien place for you. And unfortunately, that happens a lot in the Caribbean today. And it's a worrying trend for me. And not get me wrong to see too much of the effects, but I think of my children, and I have one in particular who, like me, I don't think she knows anywhere called home. She just goes where she goes. And there's another one that seems to be down that same path. And I hear it a lot from some of the young people that I talk to. They just don't believe there's anything called happily ever after. And that's a sad, sad thing to hear from a young generation. I would like to still believe in happily ever after for the children and the children's children. But always good hearing you, sir. We're gonna keep pounding it until, you know, somebody finds a way to fix it. Brass Decks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
Just a minute, let me turn off the radio, please.
Mm-hmm. Sure, no problem.
I've been waiting since 10 o'clock, so long. I had a minute before.
Well, that is called persistence. Persistent lady. Yes, ma'am.
Right. Well, I agree with the first caller who was in the hospital. That is why I waited, because there had to be something good coming out today that I managed to get through to you, because I'm not a regular caller. And as I wrote you years ago, I say you're one of your dedicated fans, but I prefer to write you. And I have written you on the transport system in 1998. So I hope you've taken it off the top of your briefcase and looked at it. But being a July, so you should remember it.
Yeah, I remember a lot. I don't like to remember some of the things I remember, but I do. Yeah.
Right. So, and now I see that the ZR stand has been constructed similarly, but I want those 10 loading bays removed, because that does not, that is not in COVID. Why I proposed, I heard Mark Williams complaining about it, the same problems that the commuters have. And that's why I called, because Mark Williams has, he has brought up three items that I have written before, so I don't want to. He mentioned them twice last week. That with the ZRs, and then he's talking about cleaning up the roads and building the bridges right from Nasco back over there across the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jubilee Gardens. Those are three things that I did write about. I wrote to the paper. And as for this one about building the bridges back across to the ZR stand and coming down River Road, you can pull up from the Nation of April the 25th, 2006, clean up the roads in time for World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and then you will see all the other things that I've written about. And I heard Mr. Nasser there just now talking about the vendor's market. You should see that as well. The vendor's market, the vendors could be down the center of Swan Street because there's enough space on both sides that they wouldn't obstruct the shop owners. And as long as they keep those things clean, both sides, there's enough space that pedestrians could walk down on both sides and the vendors would be down the middle, right down from
the top of the street. But wasn't the whole idea to make it pedestrian and people moving freely?
Right.
And then we just seem to clog up even that idea.
Yeah, well, you see, from her street corner there, opposite the market,
mm-hmm.
you know, the George Penn Market, I call it, you know, you know what I mean? Right down the center of Swan Street, just through the street, cross the road. But keep these vendors in the middle where there's all the tiles and so on.
Uh-huh.
And the shop owners still have enough space on
both sides of the road, yeah.
So for the pedestrians to walk, they wouldn't be taking up their space.
Mm-hmm.
And the vendors would have their own bins and the umbrellas and the collapsible tables and so on. And in the evening, they clean them up and leave the garbage, the refuse there for the garbage.
Yeah, the people to pick
the
up.
Mm-hmm. And the old ladies with the seasoning and so could be in between, and the post guards could be in the little alleys where they usually are, that they won't obstruct things. But when you rug these things to these places, that nobody in government pays any attention to us poor people. So that is...
You must get a piece of paper that says
this
idea is coming from a rich person, and perhaps they pay attention to it. No, but one of the comments I made yesterday to the architects and the guys who went for the program is that when we redevelop and redesign the market, they tell me there'll be parking in there. I tell them I just hope that we don't get to the stage where even that becomes cluttered and congested. And then people complain that you can't move through freely. Because even with the best of plans, we just become indisciplined and do all sorts of wrong and strange things. And that's why I pointed out the nice area across here that was cleaned up, that became a car park, that outside in front of the booths, the vendors' places, have now become places where vagrants sleep, taxis park, taxis double park, people park on the outside of the taxis to park. You see that moving of people between Jordan Supermarket that the gentleman this morning tell me is struggling and the cars park on the other side of the road? It is almost impossible at some times to drive along River Road because of the number of people crossing the road in about 6 or 7 different spots. Slowly, most of them elderly people, going across to the bus stand, walking through the lines of taxis and other cars parked there. That is the type of human traffic coming out of a place that they claim struggling. Well, I would not like to see what would happen if they weren't struggling, because I don't think those people walking across with bags got air in it. They got to have something in it. This was unexpected, but I thank you for the opportunity to share with you on this, the Monday edition of Dr. Brass Tacks. I don't usually get to open the baton, but I enjoyed a little knock. You're going to have another surprise because Rudolph has returned from the North Pole to replace Larry. So apparently we juggling the baton order like the West Indies. So you have Kenrick Rudolph coming after... I can't say who's a good opening batsman. I ain't even sure he was good. Thank you anyway for the contribution. Thank you, John, for keeping me on guard. And thank you for your emails, WhatsApps, and of course, the words of encouragement. And then it's Jay. Have a good afternoon.